Welcome to Now. Let's meet the man who controls the destiny of your child or grandchild in public school. He's the new education secretary with $100 billion to spend. On what? Well, stay with us.
Now on PBS. On the Road with host David Brancaccio and senior correspondent Maria Hinojosa. Funding for Now is provided by the Orfila Family Foundation, the Park Foundation, the Marguerite Casey Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the CS Fund, the Desjardins Blackman Fund, and by the following. And by contributions to your PBS stations from viewers like you. Thank you.
We can complain all we want about good American jobs going overseas, but without top-notch schools, we may never get those jobs back. You may remember the education survey of 15-year-olds in 30 countries. The United States came in 21st in science, 25th in math. The Obama administration may not have a global competitiveness czar, but it does have Arne Duncan, the new Secretary of Education. Is fixing American public schools an impossible task? Well, you tell me, after you see what's been going on in Duncan's old school district back in Chicago. Carla Murthy produced our report. I don't want to put a dent in your sense of national pride, but here's the thing. Too many schools are failing in this country. In math, our fourth graders are outperformed by kids in Kazakhstan. A quarter of American high schoolers drop out. Up to a third of new teachers in America also drop out within their first 3 years on the job. But President Obama thinks he's found the guy who's going to turn that around. It's the president's hoop-shooting buddy from Chicago, Arne Duncan.
I think we are putting together the best basketball playing cabinet in American history.
Besides Duncan having a pretty good jump shot, Obama believes that his man has an innovative vision for education that'll get results, even if it means stepping on the toes of traditional political allies.
When faced with tough decisions, Arne doesn't blink. He's not beholden to any one ideology, and he doesn't hesitate for 1 minute to do what needs to be done.
To get things done, Arne Duncan has been given a lot of money. $100 billion in stimulus money. That's almost twice the education budget from last year. And that makes him one of the most powerful secretaries of education we have ever seen. All the teachers I keep bumping into keep saying, well, when you see Arne Duncan, ask him, so what's he going to do with the money?
This is a historic investment in education, over $100 billion. But let me be clear, investing the status quo is not going to get us where we need to go. And what we're doing is coupling unprecedented resources with an unprecedented reform agenda.
New guys in town always love the word reform, but just what exactly does Duncan's vision of reform look like? To find out, we travel to his hometown, Chicago, where he ran the public school system for 7 years. During that time, the number of elementary school kids meeting state standards went up 30%, and the dropout rate went down every year he was in charge. In the process, he turned Chicago into his own education laboratory that delighted and upset a lot of people. To fix the worst schools in his district, Duncan took a radical approach. He would simply start the school over. As part of a plan called Renaissance 2010, Duncan closed schools down, got rid of the entire staff, and then reopened the school with a whole new staff and a new label. Turnaround schools. It's a strategy that upset some powerful constituents, including the Chicago Teachers Union, which represents 24,000 teachers. The union's president, Marilyn Stewart, is opposed to a wave of school turnarounds now that the head of her old school district has gone national.
I would hope Arne Duncan would replicate the models that are working. He wanted Chicago. He knew that Chicago can be the model for the nation. Chicago can be the model for the nation, but not the way they're doing it.
It's actually a step in the wrong direction, not the right direction. And that's all I want to say.
At the school board meeting this past January, Chicago teachers unleashed their anger about Duncan's turnaround strategy, which, it must be remembered, throws out good teachers along with the bad.
Why am I being thrown into that barrel? Not to be heard of again. I'm a soon-to-be displaced teacher with two bachelor's degrees with honors. I just met a young lady who was given a third-grade position at one of these turnaround schools, and she had the audacity to ask me for help.
Despite the public outcry, 8 schools have been shut down, reopened, and restaffed. Now Duncan is going nationwide. He's designated $3 billion in stimulus money to improve thousands of low-performing schools around the country.
In the toughest of our schools, there are always great teachers. Unfortunately, the fact is there isn't enough of a critical mass. There's not enough of them. And in this work, David, in education, talent matters tremendously. Nothing is more important.
Studies show that a good teacher is the single most important factor in boosting student achievement. Even more important than class size, money spent per student, or the quality of textbooks. And the turnaround model is one way to get rid of any crummy teachers and hire, hopefully, better ones. We'll get to see how this plays out in just a minute. But if the turnaround model is the stick approach to getting better teachers, Duncan also supports a carrot approach. It's a separate big program to pay teachers more.
Teachers aren't motivated by money. They're not in it to make $1 million. But we have to reward excellence among great teachers, among great principals. And this is one of the only professions where systematically we don't reward excellence.
Rewarding excellence sounds like a good idea. But in the past, performance pay programs, as they're called, have been intensely opposed by teachers' unions because typically they're based solely on student test scores.
This is the business model where you're coming from a mindset where you can control all of your variables.
Connecting teacher pay to test scores is a minefield. Should teachers who take on the toughest to educate students get penalized? Isn't it easier for the teacher who gets the brightest kids from the most stable homes to win the salary derby?
But just to tie a particular teacher to a grade when there's so many things that can influence that the teacher has no control over, I think it's not fair.
But in Chicago, Duncan tried something different. It's called the Teacher Advancement Program. Instead of rewarding teachers for better test scores, teachers get more if they train more.
In the majority of performance pay programs, they're focused just on performance.
Todd White is the senior VP of training for the Advancement Program.
As opposed to just telling teachers, you've got to perform better, your kids have to perform better, we put in place a structure that ensures that teachers have the support they need to grow professionally.
Today, White is training teachers in Philadelphia on the Advancement Program, which is in 220 schools around the country. Teachers receive ongoing training to grow professionally and receive more pay as their responsibilities increase. Plus, all the teachers in a school, in fact the entire staff, is rewarded if students perform better.
We like this because there's embedded professional development. The whole school is compensated for doing something as a team.
The advancement program is now being phased into 40 schools in Chicago. But there is another reason why Duncan was able to get the program into schools.
Where Chicago went right was they involved the union.
And that helped avoid what could have been a contentious process.
There's evidence and there's proof that when districts work with the teachers' unions, there's success.
Duncan might have been successful with getting one kind of performance pay program in Chicago, but already, the National Teachers Union is concerned about the same thing that upset teachers in Chicago. It turns out there is a provision in the stimulus law to push all state governors to build a data system that could, among other things, be used to link teacher pay to students and test scores. Duncan will give out an additional $16 billion to states that either have the educational data system in place or can show serious plans to do so. It's all part of Duncan's grand initiative, which he puts this way.
I think what No Child Left Behind got wrong was they are very, very loose on the goals. So there are 50 different goalposts all over the map, but then No Child Left Behind was very tight about how you hit those goals. I want to flip that. I want to fundamentally turn that on its head. I want to be much tighter, much clearer on these goals, but then be much looser and give states the chance to create and innovate and push hard to hit that higher bar.
Duncan wants all students to be college ready and to be able to compete with other students around the world using internationally benchmarked standards. But reaching those goals requires cooperation from school officials and those who represent teachers.
Can you really pull off these changes without the help of unions? You know, in Chicago, the union liked some of what you did and didn't like a lot of what you did.
We're trying to fundamentally change the culture here, and can we become the engine of innovation? Just as we have to do it, unions have to change, principals have to change, teachers have to change, parents have to step up. But for us to get where we need to go, business as usual is not going to get us there.
In Duncan's view, if we really want to fix our schools, it'll be like training for a marathon. Some of it is going to hurt.
As a country, we have to, you know, be willing to experience a little bit of pain and discomfort. That's the only way we're going to get there. Our children deserve it.
Now come with me to see with your own eyes how one of Duncan's very painful policies, the turnaround model, played out among the children, their families, and their school. Harvard Elementary is located in the south side of Chicago, in one of the toughest, poorest areas in the city. 98% of the kids that go to school here live in poverty.
It was literally a war zone here at Harvard.
Wanda Wilburn has three kids that go to the school.
You know, the drugs, the gangs, the shooting, the fights, the mob action, it was horrible. I mean, I would literally have them huddled together trying to get in the building to make sure that we would be safe.
But the violence in the neighborhood did not stop at the school doors. Tierra is an eighth grader here.
They be having fights every single day. And they just do anything they want, run in the halls and stuff.
In a single year, the police were called over 100 times to the school. The way Tierra's mom, Katanya Withers, sees it, the principal had little control over the students.
Children wouldn't respect him as a man, especially as a principal, but not as a man.
Did you swear words to him?
They used to, yeah, to his face, and nothing would be done.
Even for veteran teachers like Devondra Barrett, teaching in such a tough school day in and day out was exhausting. Barrett grew up in the neighborhood and went to this very school as a kid. She's been teaching for 15 years.
I kept praying for change and wanted it to change.
Did it sometimes get frustrating for you, or...?
Oh, yes, it became frustrating, but I just wanted to hang in there because I know what the purpose that I was here for was to teach the children and to just hang in there and stay with the children.
Getting students to actually learn in such a tough environment was not easy, and it showed up in the test results. Out of over 3,000 elementary schools in the state of Illinois, Harvard Elementary ranked in the bottom 10. Arnie Duncan was determined to turn that around. The plan, every adult in the school would get a dreaded pink slip.
What was it that led you to take what really is a drastic course of action?
We had put in some of these schools millions of additional dollars, done things around the edges, and at the end of the day, 88, 89, 90% of students were still not reading at grade level. It's this absolutely dismal failure. These children have one chance in education. They can't wait, and we had to be bold and do the right thing by them.
The news that the axe would fall on Harvard Elementary came in 2007, but many parents were not buying what Duncan was selling.
I thought the school was in such dire condition that there was nothing that they could absolutely do beyond a miracle from God.
Devondra Barrett didn't think it was going to work either. She says over the years, the school district had made a lot of promises that added up to nothing. But now she had something else to keep her up at night. Barrett, a devoted teacher who wanted to give back to her community, was out of a job, like everybody else.
But here you are, by all accounts, a great teacher, knocking yourself out with these students, and then they give you a pink slip? That must have been hard.
It was very scary because it was like, okay, you have to get out here and try again. And I felt sorry for some of the teachers who were close to retirement and just, you know, people were crying. It was upsetting.
Teachers, cafeteria workers, janitors, everybody gone. To restaff the school, Duncan then handed Harvard over to a not-for-profit company called the Academy for Urban School Leadership. And the first person they hired was a new principal, Andre Cowling.
After finding that I would be principal here at the school, I just had to stand out and just see what was actually going on, and it was complete chaos.
At 6'7", Principal Cowling is an imposing figure. Before going into education, he was in the Army and served a tour in Iraq. He later took a corporate job and was making good money, but he says his real calling was in education.
So you're looking at what at some level was chaos, to use your word, and you're thinking, why did I take this job?
I will tell you, I thought that for a moment. This is the most difficult job that I've ever had in life,
but it is the most rewarding job that I've ever had.
You going upstairs, little man?
Principal Cowling had to figure out how he was going to change the entire culture of the school to eradicate a mindset that this was a problem too big to fix.
I used to just sit in my car just right where that, right behind the school bus over there, and just take notes.
So you're doing reconnaissance is what you're doing over there.
That's what we call it. It was definitely a recon mission.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
One of the first things he saw that he wanted to change was the out-of-control way that kids piled into school.
If our children don't come into the building orderly, you can pretty much rest assured that their day is going to be disorderly the entire day.
And you call it what, setting the table?
Setting the table. We call the instruction the actual meal. But you can't give them a meal if the table hasn't been set yet.
Now there's no more running in the hallways. Students line up quietly and walk to their classes. Cowling says he relied on his military training to get through that tough first year. But he says kids actually respond to this level of structure and clear expectations.
Ms. Johnson, class has already gone up. That means you're late, huh? You know, we can't handle a lot of what goes on or control a lot what goes on in the neighborhood and whatnot. We can't do that. But when our kids are here for 6.5 to 8 hours a day for some of our kids, we can definitely control what goes on in their lives then.
Everyone at Harvard was allowed to reapply for their jobs. Devondra Barrett had gotten two other job offers, but she reapplied, and Cowling said yes.
So what do you make this new principal?
He's great. He's great.
But just from your professional opinion, what is it that he does to maintain more order in the school?
Well, first of all, he is very tall. So him being 6 feet plus, the children have to look up to him, and then they feel a little bit, you know, like maybe I shouldn't try him. That looks good. That's a
Barrett was one of only three teachers that the principal asked back. Now Cowling had to find 23 more teachers that he believed were just as dedicated and qualified as Barrett. So he then turned to the Academy for Urban School Leadership, the not-for-profit in charge of the turnaround. The Academy has created a pipeline of new teachers that they train to work in turnaround schools. We went to visit one of their training schools in action. Dodge Renaissance Academy is funded by school district money and grants from places like the Gates Foundation. The Academy puts potential teachers through a year-long program where they get a chance to work with real students in real Chicago public schools like this one.
You know, you can talk and talk and talk about the practice of teaching, but to truly get in the classroom and get mentored by someone who's proficient in the field, that's, you know, that's priceless.
Danielle Silverman and Lakia Poston are teachers in training. Modeled after the medical profession, they're called residents, only with red pens and no scrubs. Debbie Thompson is their mentor teacher and has been working with them all year long.
What do you look for as you're observing?
I look for little spots where I could tweak their lesson just to, you know, maximize instructional time, minimize behavior distractions, that sort of thing.
Because we've all met them, wonderful people who want to be teachers, who may know their subject area,
yeah,
but don't have the experience in the classroom, and they can get eaten alive if they don't have these techniques.
Yeah. The whole purpose, too, I'm preparing them to go into turnaround schools, and that's going to be the biggest struggle they're going to have in their first year.
Getting kids to move from one place to another can often create a lot of commotion. One technique they learn is to teach the students a routine. Position number one means sitting down.
Show me two by standing.
Number two, stand up quietly. And number three, move to the next location.
Everyone else, show me three by walking to your seat quietly.
But the training doesn't end there. Every day, mentors and residents meet after school. It's a chance for teachers to unwind and get some advice. Danielle Silverman, the resident teacher, had been getting some grief from one of her little bundles of joy.
You're distracting our morning meeting. Please take your seat. And he was like,
you know what? He was probably looking for that from you.
I try so hard to ignore him because I think he is searching for me to call my bluff.
The mentor teacher says, all right, pull the kid out of the group immediately when he acts up.
Not being able to participate does have some sort of leverage with him.
Mm-hmm. Just tell him.
I'm not giving you warnings anymore.
I'm not giving you any more warnings.
The collaboration that's developed among teachers is key to the Academy's philosophy. Without that, teachers are more likely to burn out.
You could have picked an easier path into education. You could have gone to some established school, upper middle class parents, everybody already knows how to behave, but that's not what you chose to do.
No, that is not what I chose to do. I believe that every child deserves to be able to say that they had a phenomenal teacher every year.
Logistically, I said it's going to be tough to do. But
back at Harvard Elementary, Principal Cowling hired 14 graduates from the academy who had little to no experience outside of their training program. Barrett took one look at the new teachers and thought,
Nope, she's not going to make it. Oh, they're going to run over him. Oh, they're going to get her good. But when school started, we was like, wow, they really have their class down and in control. But I didn't really think they were going to make it.
So the students act differently now?
Yes, they act differently. We still have some that, you know, that try to test you. But I know they're performing very well because you can tell when you go by the different classrooms. They're engaged, they're quiet, they're learning, they're happy.
In the first year of the turnaround at Harvard, 10% more students were meeting state standards. And there's not been a single police visit to the school. Just before leaving for Washington in January, Arne Duncan announced that four more schools in Chicago will get the turnaround treatment this fall, an announcement that has the Chicago Teachers Union fired up.
I think it's disrespectful to teachers because you're saying we're dispensable and it come a dime a dozen.
And you think it's throwing out good talent when that happens?
It's absolutely throwing out good talent when it happens.
Stewart says it doesn't make sense to get rid of the teachers, and it makes even less sense to get rid of the janitors and cafeteria workers, too.
In these tough economic times, why would you go into a school and say all of the adults have to go? These are people who have nothing to do with the academic achievement of the children in that particular school.
Stewart says Duncan should take a look at Earl Elementary. There, they kept the staff and just got new leadership in the school, and test scores have been improving.
Arne Duncan should appreciate this, and President Obama would appreciate it, that you fire the coach, not the team.
I understand what Marilyn Stewart says when she says that. But in the case where you have the worst performing schools in the city, the most critically ill schools in the city, you have to replace them.
But what's the rationale for the janitors and the lunch lady?
Let's take our janitors, for instance. Our children should be able to enter into school and into a very clean environment every single day. And if they can't do that, then we need to get a set of janitors that can actually do that. And if one part of the entire organization fails, that could actually cause us to fail at our mission as a whole.
At Harvard Elementary, Cowling rehired all the cafeteria workers but replaced all the janitors. And 70% of the teachers that were let go did find other jobs. It's still too early to see how successful the turnaround schools in Chicago will be in the longer run. But now in Washington, Arne Duncan has the power to set the course not just for one school district, but across 50 states.
Are you going to go around the country urging states to start closing down some of the really bad schools?
Well, we've already done that. That's one of the assurances we actually put in the stimulus law, asking states to tell us, what are they doing to turn around those schools?
I know when it's announced that a school is going to get shut down, that's hard for the community. I mean, I talked to some parents that were initially upset.
It's very hard. And going out and talking to a room full of parents who are angry, who are worried. But those are the parents I value the most because they care the most about their children. And the parents who are the angriest at first invariably are the parents who are the most happy with you afterwards.
I was like a child on Christmas when I first stepped back in this building. And I was like, wow, the transformation that it went through. And so it's been great. It's been a blessing, truly.
Arne Duncan might have won over parents at Harvard Elementary, but now he has to make his case to the entire nation.
As a country, we've lost our way. And I'm just convinced we have to educate our way to a better economy. That's the only way we're going to get to there from here. And trying to get America back to its spot is the international leader in education.